This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
On the grill with me this morning is Angie Stevens. She's the Asia Pacific Managing Director for Royal Caribbean Cruises. Angie, welcome to Malaysia and of course, happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, thank you.
Now, there are fewer sights, Angie, more majestic than a cruise liner larger than the Titanic dock in harbour. Or experiences more bucket listy than a top floor berth on one of your tubs. But by golly, the carbon footprint of one of your boats blows the hole, a hole the size of Costa Rica in the ozone layer. Not to mention the amount of waste that you drop in the ocean. So tell me, how are Royal Caribbean addressing this very real issue of the environment and the damage you might inflict on it?
Yes, well, at Royal Caribbean, we sail in the water, so we must protect the waters. And it's been a 25-year mission of ours to save the waves. And we've been at the cutting edge of environmental improvements and creating fuel-efficient ships and environmentally friendly ships. And we always go above and beyond compliance, and we've set the standard and beat the standard in terms of that. So on Royal Caribbean, we employ researchers and scientists to create more environmental, more fuel-efficient ways to run our ships in the high seas. But I think we're probably doing more than most people do at home in terms of protecting the environment. So if you look at waste, of which you mentioned, 75% of our waste never reaches a landfill. And so in we're working towards zero waste.
Well, what do you mean when it doesn't reach the landfill? Because you sail in the oceans, and therefore the waste that you emit and discard ends up in the ocean, not in a landfill. So that sounds a bit incongruous to me.
We do not dump anything into the ocean other than clean water. We process our water so that it is super clean. And even in the emissions from the ship, we remove 98% of the sulfur dioxide. So it's still not perfect, but we've partnered with the World Wildlife Foundation and have committed to reducing the carbon footprint over the next few years.
Well, I mean, break it down for us, right? Because we have seen, and especially in Penang at the Port Swettenham Pier, you've got huge, massive cruise ships coming in every other day. And you can smell it. You can see them. You can smell them coming from a mile away. And of course, the engines are never turned off because that's how you power the boats, clearly, right? And obviously, there are clean ships and then there are less clean ships. But according to research by some of the NGOs and the think tanks, I think, for example, the EU-based non-profit Transport and Environment points out that pollution from the shipping industry results in as much as 50,000 premature deaths in the world. So, how do you demarcate what really is clean and not clean when it comes to one of your massive cruise ships?
Well, I think it's also clarifying the myth, right? So if you're talking about the shipping industry, that also probably includes cargo, of which there's very little regulation. But in terms of Royal Caribbean, it is our mission to be environmentally friendly, to reduce emissions, to sustainably source the product that we bring on board, and to be good stewards in the destinations that we sail in. So as you mentioned, there are more efficient ships and there's less efficient ships, and Royal Caribbean is the leader in efficiency and environmental friendly.
Do your boats use batteries or do they use fossil fuel burning engines?
We're currently converting into the new fuel requirements, which the government regulations are requiring by 2020, will be in full compliance. We're also working on a fuel cell technology for our new builds.
So you're still using engines with fossil fuel
across
capabilities?
Across the fleet, there are some of our older ships that are doing that, but we are in the process of converting that to meet the requirements for 2020.
So what does it look like in 2020? How much cleaner will the boats be and how will they be powered?
We're committed to reducing the carbon footprint by 35% by 2020. And so we'll be fully compliant with the new regulations by then.
Well, so this whole notion, Angie, that obviously cruise line operators would decide to operate out of Asian cities that might be more dependent on tourist dollars rather than, for example, a more developed, more wealthy city like a Sydney or a London, who might be less dependent on more tourist dollars and obviously much more vocal about the environmental footprint that you might be bringing to their shores. Is that an incorrect notion coming as you do from China, where you're based, and now you're in Southeast Asia?
That's right. We want to be good partners to the communities that we sail in and that we visit. And so whether you're an established community or an up-and-coming community, we're going to partner with the local officials to make sure that we're seen as a valuable economic outlet for the community, as well as an environmentally friendly option. And as I mentioned, we're doing more on board our ships than most cities and states are doing within their own.
So obviously
land.
The commercial proposition is much, much more compelling right now for your entity, clearly, as a U.S.-listed company than, for example, guarding the environment, because some of your boats can reach as many as 5,000 to 6,000 passenger capacity, which is massive. These are mobile sailing, basically, townships on
That's
water.
Right. Yes, yeah. You're exactly right. We're floating cities at sea, and we're probably a leader in terms of what cities do to protect the environment and the steps that we're taking to make sure that we're environmentally friendly.
So earnings for your entity, and I'm looking at your Royal Caribbean-listed entity in America, it's been quite choppy in terms of market capitalization and revenues the last couple of years. In fact, 2018 from 2017 shows not a huge increase in terms of top line, and of course your profits also not much different from the year earlier. So the untapped markets of Asia must be very much a key mandate for you, Angie, sitting as you do in Southeast Asia. How important is ASEAN to your business proposition?
It's extremely important. And, you know, over the last 5 years, we've had steady growth. And we've announced to the street that we have a vision of 2020 to have double earnings per share. And we're well on that trajectory. And so we're doing that by globalization. The expansion globally, and as well as building more profitable ships, is how we're going to get there. And Asia is a huge piece of that. And the way that we're doing that is by bringing new ships and new hardwares and developing new destinations within the Asian region to attract new customers within the Asia region.
How do you build a more profitable ship when you're investing this much on making your ships more clean and green?
It's all part of the formula. So we have to operate more efficiently. And to do that, you create cleaner fuel. You create ways to be more...
How do you create cleaner fuel?
With the scrubbing that we do, with the emissions that we scrub the emissions so that 98% are sulfur dioxide free. We've created a new air filtration system that basically creates a blanket of bubbles on the bottom of the ship to streamline how we sail through the waters. It becomes 4% more fuel efficient. So we're constantly looking and creating new ways that are leading the industry.
How do you explain then, you know, cities like Venice, which is obviously a gorgeous place to be in and very romantic, but there's been a huge blowback from environmental, the green lobby against, cruise ships of your size and stature entering their shores because of the huge environmental impact of them entering what is essentially a very hallowed city.
Well, I think it's also the education of what Royal Caribbean stands for compared to what other cruise brands are investing in terms of the environmental footprint that they're creating. This is a leading pillar within our organization. And so when we generalize what general assumptions are, I think we can take Royal Caribbean out of that.
So when you talk to, port cities like Singapore and Penang and, essentially perhaps even Malacca when the gateway comes up in future, what kind of discussions do you have with local authorities? Is it very much a commercial economic discussion, or is it really how you're mitigating your carbon footprint at the same time?
The current discussion right now is how do we grow awareness of cruising within the environment or within the communities. The environmental piece is a pillar with Royal Caribbean, but within the Asian region, we haven't heard much in terms of conversation about that as we have in other regions that we've been sailing in longer. But the government has been incredibly supportive, especially in Malaysia and especially in Singapore. I think with the formation of the ASEAN Cruise Tourism Council, where the tourist ministers across the region have come together to help develop cruise tourism in a sustainable way, has been very positive.
So clearly, even from the regulatory standpoint, the tourist dollar and the revenue element, much more part of their mindset. So I can't blame you for wanting to monetize as part of the market if the policies are not there in place necessarily. But you come into a region where geopolitics is a real concern. I mean, if you straight the Straits, the South China Sea, obviously very much the subject of many countries' adorations, Angie. And of course, the Straits of Malacca as well, where you ply your trade. How do you mitigate the potential concerns that arise as a result of these issues?
You know, again, we focus on being a good citizen within the communities that we sail, and we want to be seen as a viable option of creating economic success in the cities that we visit. And so, for example...
Okay, so that sounds like PR, right? How do you address if pirates come on board? How do you address security concerns if pirates come aboard and take some of your American passengers hostage?
Well, we have a very high-profile safety and security team on board our ship, as well as placed globally around the world. We're constantly monitoring these situations, but never have we come even close to a situation like this. But we do security screening, constant evaluation, and so safety and security with our guests is the number one priority.
Okay, so if you have a full complement on board, say 5,000 people, how large is the security team on board the ship?
Well, we don't share the details of our security because obviously that's confidential, but I think our track record of zero incidents would speak for itself.
I'm talking this morning to Angie Stevens, the Asia-Pacific Managing Director for Royal Caribbean Cruises. We're going to be coming back after this, Angie, and talking more about the commercial elements of your business. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
I'm talking this morning to Angie Stevens, the Asia-Pacific Managing Director for the Royal Caribbean Cruise Line Operator. And of course, Angie, I understand that in the last few years, new builds have been coming onto the market at a breakneck pace. I think that pace has only really taken a bit of a breather the last 1 or 2 years. Where have the fresh capacity really come from? I mean, clearly, is it from North America mainly or other parts of the world, including China?
Well, Royal Caribbean International is the largest global cruise line in the world, and we've gotten that position because of the new builds that we have on the order book. So if you look at the next 10 years, we have the most robust new build order book than any other cruise line. And those 10 ships have to go somewhere. So, of course, the core of our business originated in North America, expanded into Europe, but now the focus is in the opportunity is really within the Asian region. And so our newest ship that's currently in the shipyard being built, Spectrum of the Seas, will be sailing through Southeast Asia and home porting in Shanghai, China. So we're getting the opportunity of having the newest, most innovative ships in the world to come into the Asian region.
Well, of course, I understand that you, like just any other airline operator, it's all about the fleet size. So, you know, break it down for us. How many ships have you got? What kind of sizes they are? What kind of capacities do they carry on the oceans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
So being a global cruise brand, we have 26 ships that sail the world. And you can literally go anywhere from Alaska to the Caribbean to Europe to Australia to Japan, to Hong Kong, and to Vietnam and Thailand throughout the Asian waters. So our ships carry anywhere from 4,000 up to close to 6,000 guests on board. And it sounds like it's a small city, and it really is. So when you're in a city of that many people, there's space to move around. There's dining options. There's neighborhoods. And so we construct our ship in that way. And I think what makes us different than other cruise line options is the innovation and the variety of activities, entertainment. And I think because this region is still very new to cruise, they don't understand what is all included and what they can experience on board a Royal Caribbean ship.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally a plethora of brands out there. You've got the Norwegians, the Cunards, the Carnivals, the Regents, the Emma Waterways, the Crystals, the Star, which is obviously Malaysian, owned by the Genting Group. Disney also is in the game. Now, how do you address local Asian tastes? Because as I understand it, in America, where cruises, as you like to call it in the industry, is very much they're a market of brand loyalists. If they're cruise Cunard, they stay on Cunard. If they cruise on yourselves, they stay on yourselves. But in Asia, I understand it's really specific to the ship. Now, is that a truism across Asia or really a China phenomenon?
Well, I think what Asia is looking for is new and innovative and different. And so if you continue...
The biggest and the best. And the biggest and the newest, right?
The biggest, the best, and the newest. And things that they've never seen before. Unexpected experiences. And so Royal Caribbean really invests. When we develop our ships, that's what we invest in. And in terms of local Asian influence, we are an international brand. And the Asian market likes to be global and likes to be international. So the core of our product and what differentiates us from other brands in the region is that we are an international experience, even within Asian waters.
I'm talking this morning to Angie Stevens, the Asia-Pacific Managing Director for the cruise line operator, Royal Caribbean. Now, when I went to your site last night, I found it quite difficult to try and book a cruise. Not that I was going to, but I was not going to go all the way, Angie, as you understand. I found it difficult to book a cruise from, say, Singapore to Alaska, right? That's quite a bit of a bucket list trip. Mm-hmm. But is that not possible? How do you strategize your trips and your tours?
So for the local market, we look at what the consumer travel preferences are. And because the region is fairly new to cruise, they want to start off on quick getaways. And so from Singapore, we offer 3, 4, 5, and 7 night vacations.
And seven, you top out at seven.
Yes. And it's round trip Singapore. Because everyone wants to try what a cruise is before giving up a full 7 to 9 to 10 days that they would have to get on an airplane long haul. But what we're finding is that, and we're actually expanding the length of our cruises in the region because after they experience it, they want to come back, they want to stay on board longer, and then eventually they'll do what we call fly cruise. So to go to Alaska, you would get on an airplane, fly to Seattle or Vancouver to enjoy a 7-night Alaskan adventure.
Okay, so clearly Malaysia, Asia, Southeast Asia is very nascent. You come from China, right? You've spent just the last 6 months in ASEAN. Prior to that, your work experience was really based in China. How is the ASEAN market shaping up to be in terms of differences in consumer patterns and spending patterns between the two countries?
Yeah, I think both are showing signs of really fast growth. Because of the size of China, that growth is being realized at a faster pace. But using Malaysia as the example, we are still in low single digits penetration for cruise. So it's really about the similarities are awareness and understand the changing the mindset of what people think a cruise is. And understanding the variety of activities on board.
They sound quite exclusivist, Angie, in terms of consumer patterns. You don't intuitively think of taking a cruise because that's the stuff of, you know, George Clooney and Julia Roberts, for example, right? How do you, you know, how much money must you spend to make it more mass than what it is now?
That's a misperception that a cruise costs too much. It is an incredible value for money, and it's very inclusive. So, what a normal family or couple may spend on a typical land vacation, I would bet that on a Royal Caribbean cruise it would be equal to or less than. Because of the inclusive nature of a Royal Caribbean cruise, including your meals, including your entertainment, including your activities, it's a more all-inclusive experience. It's very affordable and a great return on your vacation dollar investment.
So for a couple, not on the top berths, clearly, one of the mid-tier berths, for example, they sail 3 days out of Singapore. Maybe they sail to Bintan or Indonesia, for example. How much would it cost them?
It would cost you less than a long weekend in Bangkok.
Which is how much?
$100 a day.
Can't be possible.
USD.
Can't be possible.
Convert that to ringgit. But
$405 as at last count. So that can't be possible, right? So how?
It is possible. It's actually more affordable to go on a Royal Caribbean cruise than to stay and go out for a weekend at home.
So you talked about how, you know, the Spectrum of the Seas, right? Your next
Spectrum
largest.
Spectrum of the Seas will be the newest ship in town, yes.
That brand's making new, big brand new, mm-hmm. et cetera, large. Talking in Shanghai, how many ports in ASEAN are large enough to accommodate ships the size of a 6,000 complement passenger,
Well, that's boat? Part of the focus of what we're working with the local governments on. So if you look at the ship will be home porting in China. There's 30 ports within the North Asian area. That can accommodate a ship of that size. If you look at the Southeast Asia area, it's closer to about 10. And so that's a focus of ours is working with the local governments to invest in infrastructure to be able to accommodate these larger vessels.
So how do you address, you know, overcrowding issues, pollution issues in, you know, any one of these 10 ASEAN ports? And clearly, I presume Singapore would be one. Swettenham Pier in Penang would be one. Malacca would be another one. I don't know how many, for example, in ASEAN would accommodate those. And a lot of them would be really underdeveloped in terms of port infrastructure, whether it's in terms of more accommodating greener ships, for example, mm-hmm. or even ships of that size.
You bring up a really good point, and guest experience is paramount for the people that are spending their vacation with us. And so it's important that we work with the local communities to develop land-based experiences that can accommodate when 4,000 to 5,000 of our guests come into the port at one time, that there's a variety of opportunity where they want to stay local and go shopping. They want to go out to see some cultural activities. They want to experience a food. So we want to divide up those people into different routes so that...
Well, you can't do that if the port itself is not, you know, capable of taking in 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people
at
one time.
That limits the ports that we can go to.
So how do you then work with ASEAN cities to, for example, build out the ports infrastructure to deal with ships of your size? Because that would be obviously self-limiting for them as well as their tourist dollar.
That's right. So I think Singapore would be kind of best in class in terms of partnering with them to build out a great cruise terminal facility as well as infrastructure within the city of what can be done. And then if you look close to home in Malaysia, our joint venture with Penang has been also a best-in-class study of, you know, a mutual joint venture investment to build out the pier terminal. And then the gateway access walking right into the city is phenomenal.
Well, I've been there. I've been right up to the doorstep and it looks pretty good. But how does the mechanics of that work? How is the ratio played out between yourselves and the local port operators? How much do you spend and how much do they spend? And how much do you both spend?
On the joint venture?
That's right.
So it's the project itself is 160 million ringgit. In terms of the split of that is not something that we're here to talk about. But we commercially work out a partnership that is a win-win for both sides. And, you know, Malaysia is a country that we want to invest in. And so what we're doing in Penang is a great first step forward in that.
Well, spell out that win-win for us, because win-win sounds good from a superficial PR perspective. But when you can actually have 5,000, 6,000 people come in from your boat for I don't know how many hours, how much do they spend? What are the real dollars and cents of the local tourists spend for you, from your passengers in the local town?
Well, you know, when I first visited Penang and was talking to the port guys, they gave an example of when one of our ships came in the early days, but the shops literally sold out. And so it's a great economic opportunity for these shops to have high profitability when our customers are in town.
How long do the passengers come into Georgetown for? Taking Georgetown as an example.
It can range. Our stops, we like to try to stay in a window of at least 8 hours to give people a full day to enjoy, you know, a meal, shopping, and cultural activities.
Okay, so what does the next 5 years look like for Royal Caribbean? What kind of like plans have you got? And how tailored would they be? How bespoke would they be to this part of the world?
So again, because we're an international brand, we stay true to that because I do think the Asian market likes to have an international experience. But the growth is here. The new ships will come and we will continue to be a leader in innovation.
So by the sound of that, you're not actually doing anything customized for the local market. You're having a one-size-fits-all for all customers. Is that right?
It's not a one-size-fits-all. I think it's a variety of international experience, including Asian flair, where people can pick and choose what they would enjoy to do, just as they would in any city that they would go visit.
Okay, so for the benefit of potential passengers, Angie, break it down for us, the rankings. And I'm not sure, I tried to find one last night, I couldn't. As I was saying earlier, a lot of brands in the market, including Star, which is run by Malaysians themselves. Where does Royal Caribbean sit and on what metrics are they ranked accordingly?
We generally, in the areas that we sail, are number one in terms of brand preference and awareness and overall experience and profitability.
According
to our consumer research, our neutral third-party consumer research, when they pit brands against brands, the consumer says, if I'm aware of a cruise, it's Royal Caribbean. And if I only have one cruise to choose from, it's Royal Caribbean.
Okay, well, good luck with the plan and hopefully Asia picks up steam, but in a clean and green way. So thank you for spending time with us. I was talking to Angie Stevens, the Royal Caribbean Managing Director for Asia Pacific, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. Now with faster speeds every day. Baru la bes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.